of all the poor things I used to do. I don't do no more, for the Lord's made a change in me.
This is Melissa, and today is the 28th of March, 2024. And this is the second half of the conversation that I had with Elmer in Thailand.
And it's quite interesting to see, to live in Thailand, because in Thailand, nobody cares about moon landings or space program or, you know, it's like it's so, and when I, you know, turn on the internet, my computer, and I listen to these truth channels, and they're like, you know, I've been living here now for 8 years almost, me and my wife, so it's been a while, and it's, you know, the thing that scares me most is the digital money they're trying to push down our throats.
Yes,
The CBDCs or what they call it.
Yeah.
But it's going to take a hell of a long time here down in Thailand to get 70 million that are not credit worthy. Mm-hmm. Well, it's going to take longer time in the East than I'm, Eastern part of the world. And I also remember Alan saying that in some broadcast, that if you can live in a third world country, go there, because that's where the new world order will have the, it will take longer time for that to have a strong role there.
Absolutely.
In certain regions. Yeah. So that was part of the decision why we moved, actually. We couldn't stand living in Norway because, you know, it was suffocating. You know?
Alan has another long-time listener on the same island where you are. I should, if you're interested.
Yeah, I briefly met him, actually.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Yeah, and he's a friend of the musician again.
Oh. This is the same guy. He's from the States, a contractor, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's very interesting also that many of the expats down here are more awake than people in general percentage-wise than people are at home. And I know many people that are not truthers, but they didn't take the vax, you know, because they were like, something's burning in the kitchen, you know. It's not like, didn't seem organic, or they were very suspicious and you know... So, yeah.
So how did you, I mean, in part it was because Alan said the third world places would be the last hit, or, you know, wouldn't get it quite so bad. Was it part of your travels and your career that led you to that particular island in Thailand, or what?
Well, the main reason was that in 2000, let's see, could that be 2012? Actually, my wife, I've known her for 25 years, but that's just through TV, you know, connections and stuff like that. But we married 9 years ago in Norway, and she had bought a house down here in 2007 on the island. So that's the reason, and then she got... She has this problem. She has post-traumatic stress disorder from certain things, and she has hypermobile joints. That's a disease you're born.
You just cut out there for a minute.
You know, well, it's just a long story. But anyway, she got disability payment, you know, early, like when she was 51 or something like that. So that's our income, you know. So we get that from Norway. So, but, and the house was already cashed out, you know, 2007. So we only have electricity, the internet, and food. And we have three dogs, so they need food, but they get the best food. They get better food than people get. So we spoil them to death. But we had that, you know, set up, and we just said, and I was living in a artist, collective. I had like, 400 square meters of, you know, gallery, and I'm doing my photo art. And I said, like, just now you got your payment, disability payment, you can take it to Thailand, and we have a house, let's move. And we just moved. Just like in 3-4 months, we just decided to move, and we gave away most of my old furniture to some church aid, and yeah, just left, took some books, took some computers, you know, essentials, and yeah. So
That's an adventure. That's an adventure. Do you both still have family in Norway?
Well, she has a mother and a very sick father that's had cancer in the nose and had 7 strokes. He used to be a commercial advertisement, you know, drawer, very talented. But he's like been in a wheelchair for 10 years now. But my mother and father is dead, and I have only one aunt left. So, and I have 2 half-brothers from my father. My father was married once in the 50s for 8 years to another woman. But, you know, they're all jabbed, and the older guy is in a wheelchair with strokes too. That happened years ago, long before COVID. He's alive still, it's a miracle. And the other half-brother is 58, and sorry, 62. And he's getting sicker and sicker and sicker because he's jabbed a couple of times. And I didn't have the time. And, you know, he doesn't have a computer. He hates the smartphone. So I didn't have any possibility to warn him, you know. And he kind of bought the whole narrative with COVID. And, you know, he was afraid to... And he was running around with the face mask all the time, he told me. And I just like, well, okay. The shots have been fired, nothing to do there, so I don't expect him to be around for too long. Sorry to say, but that's, you know, and the last time I spoke to him, that was 2 weeks ago, and then he was like, and he was not himself at all. He
really?
Was just like, he was like always humorous, funny, you know, self-ironic, and that was just gone. It was, like, scary.
Mm.
So now I don't have my family's... I have a daughter from an earlier relationship. She's 16 in October this year. But she's been jabbed, too. But I don't know, maybe they gave... She seems fine, and the mother, too. But the grandmother of my daughter just passed away on my birthday, of all things.
Oh, no.
So, yeah, that was weird.
Your daughter's in Norway?
Yeah. She lives with her mother, you know, in Norway. And my ex is a freelance journalist. Mm-hmm. She used to work in one of the bigger newspapers in Oslo, in Norway. And then she went freelance, you know, while we were still together. And that was the weird thing, because she knew my father, and we watched documentaries about 9/11. She read some. We were all in agreement that, you know, things were what they was, you know. And when my father died, she just flipped, you know.
That is interesting.
She was just going like a jellyfish, just going back to its original size or form. And just was mainstream and just like, but didn't we agreed upon this, right? Yeah, you know, how can you not? And then, you know, we had some quarrels. And so I left when my baby was 1.5 years old. We broke up and I moved into my own apartment. And so it was kind of sad, but I felt betrayed in a way, you know, in a deep way. Yeah. So that was sad, and you know, but what can I do? And she, you know, she bought the whole Corona scam, everything, you know.
Well, that's
and all her family members, her sister, everybody. So.
Are you able to have much of a relationship with your daughter?
Oh yeah, well, not much. I call her, you know, a few times every month, and we talk, you know. That's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very platonic, you know, it's far away. And I tried to get her to come down here and visit me, but her mother is like, oh, Thailand is too dangerous. And no, it's not dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's like, well, she's 16 almost. So maybe now she can decide that she wants to come down on her own. I hope. And I don't have, we don't have, we get along fine. We have enough money per month, but we don't have, you know, like I can't just buy an airplane ticket to Norway and stay at the hotel for a month. I don't have that economy.
So,
Norway is like one of the most expensive places in the world, you know. So it's horribly expensive. You wouldn't believe. I think in 1 liter of petrol now is $3.50 for 1 liter.
Ooh.
That's a third of a gallon.
Wow. That is expensive, yeah.
That is.
So
and then the electric, we have hydropower in Norway, and that's all been sold out through the Acer agreement with the European nations, you know,
uh-huh.
with the EU, even though we are not a member. it's bad. So they have, and people are starving in Norway now. They're beginning to starve. I'm
really?
Not kidding you. People are standing in food lines now in Norway. Yes.
What kind of an excuse are they giving? Because I'm hearing different things about hunger and food production problems and supply chain. Everywhere you look, you get a different excuse for what's going
on. I don't know what excuse they give. I don't follow Norwegian mainstream media
mm-hmm.
or any media for that matter. But, the Norwegians are a special kind of breed of people. Well, the mother Norwegians are. They are very conform. They're very suffering from the Stockholm syndrome, if you understand what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
You know that.
Mm-hmm.
And it should be called the Norway syndrome or the Oslo syndrome, because it's actually worse in Norway than in Sweden. But they are so uniform, and they do whatever they're told. They have been hammered in the head all their lives. And that, we're all this collective group and blah, 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 blah. But I don't know what kind of, I think people are, they know what's wrong because of this, all these agreements with EU and, selling the electricity cheaply to Germany, England, and UK and so forth. But they're just complaining, and then 2 weeks later they just accept it. They accept the price hike or whatever it is. They just accept it. And then they complain about something else, and then nothing is done. But what can they do? You know, the whole system is taken over, you know. It's a sad story, you know. And I'm just waiting to, you know, I remember Alan talking about banning firewood.
Yes.
You know? And that's coming, that's probably coming, and when that's coming to Norway, I wonder if some civil obedience will arise, I hope. Because that is insane, because then people will just freeze to death in the winter. Yeah. And they've already been doing, you know, in England, I heard Alan talk about 40, 50,000 dying each winter in the UK.
That's terrible. I don't know if it's that high, but I think the highest was close to 20,000 one year. But I think most years they have thousands of people who freeze to death or have to make a choice between eating and heating. And for some reason, I mean, I've seen that there are similar stories that come out of Germany, for instance, other parts of Europe. But it's like a plague in England of people who cannot afford to heat themselves. And they've tried, what you're talking about, banning firewood. In Canada, there are places already, like I think in Montreal, where you can't have a wood-burning stove unless it's been retrofitted in a way. You know, it's almost, by the time they put these filters in, it's a non-functioning unit. Same thing in parts of the western U.S., Oregon maybe, or Washington State, where in certain urban areas, wood-burning stoves aren't allowed. And a wood-burning stove is one of the cleanest things that you can have.
Of course.
I mean, But people don't know, they're ignorant.
And you can use all the ash from the firewood, and you can put that on your field when you're growing things, because it's full of minerals from the trees, which the plants needs. That's what we did in the old days.
That's right, or make soap out of it.
Yeah, yeah. There's so many things you can do. And it's like, I don't know. And it's so sad to see that, you know, just from the 70s, my grandfather, he had these, you know, I grew up on a small island, and my mother's father and mother lived on an even smaller island just south of the main island. And we just took a small boat trip, 10 minutes over. And most of my childhood, you know, in the summers were spent there. And, you know, the father of my mother, he was a teacher in literature and professor in literature. But he was like growing carrots, onions, potatoes, had his own compost, we didn't have animals, but, you know, and he was rowing in a rowboat to work every morning.
Oh, my goodness.
Like, you know, to the mainland. You know, that was true grit. Yeah, he was like 2 meters, 10 centimeters, very tall guy, strong, very stoic guy. But he made his own food. You know, we ate our own vegetables. You know, I can remember that. That was in the 70s. Now nobody does that anymore. Almost nobody. Yeah. So it's very sad to see that, you know, they go to the supermarket and buy all these things, and they mostly it's imported from the Netherlands or some other place, and or of course some fruits from Africa. And but they're, you know, Norwegians have lost contact with nature, except for skiing. That's it, you know.
That's it.
they've really lost their way with nature, and all this for me. Going through this awakening process has connected me to nature like nothing else ever has in my life.
Really?
Because I see now the value of everything, because to steal something from another podcaster, there is no lie in nature. Nature doesn't lie, never lies.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? In a metaphorical sense, it never lies. Yeah. So if you put your hand in the fire, well, you're going to burn yourself. It happens, you know, and you can take just, you know, multiply that, you know, and there's an apple.
Yeah, I was having a back.
You can go into the jungle and you can pick papayas or those for free. Nobody cares. It's of course it grows very freely. So that's a big advantage with the tropics. But you know. But the other thing with the Thai people is like the heat, you know, the heat makes people kind of, and when things are easy, they become a little bit lazy, you know what I mean? And we people that used to live the old way up in north, we were always preserving for winter and, you know, chopping wood in the spring and drying the wood, getting ready for winter, having our earth cellars filled up with potatoes and carrots, you know. Always, you know, we have another mindset altogether, you know. Here they're just like thinking 2 days ahead, you know. More like that, you know,
yes,
to simplify.
Yes, absolutely. The kind of island mentality. There have been some sociologists and anthropologists who've done interesting work on that, you know, what you call the ways in which societies develop, and there is something about those cold countries that makes people more individualistic. We do come from people that have had to rely on, you know, thinking ahead, planning, how am I going to heat myself. There's been some interesting work that has been done on where you've got peoples who have learned to rely on themselves, and they tend to have small clan and small clan identity, like a family, an immediate family, as opposed to a more collective kind of culture that you get often in a warmer climate.
Yeah. And easy come, easy go. I've seen the same thing in certain parts of Africa. to some extent in Southern America, but less there because that's more because of political unrest. And even though the men are tougher, much tougher in Central America than they are in Asia, I would say. But Thailand, you know, after COVID, it changed, I guess, like every country changed a lot. You see when the income is taken away slowly by tourists not coming, mm-hmm. you saw the desperation in the Thai people coming slowly, and then you saw the true self. You know, they kind of become, they look at expats as walking ATMs, you know,
mm-hmm.
you know, and money banks. And when the income just kind of dries up, they can't, you know, it was like, it was a double whammy for them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one thing, fallout from the vaccines and things like that, but, and the lockdowns and everything. But, you know, so many businesses just went belly up here, and it has not bounced back the way it was, and it probably never will. And that's not the plan either. So, I think one foreign minister and one other from the cabinet went to the World Economic Forum last meeting now from Thailand.
Really?
So that's not a good sign. Yeah, that's true too. That's not a good sign. The foreign minister and another minister, I don't remember which department, but they were recently at the World Economic Forum.
Yeah, so, they're getting on board. Let me ask a question about other little things I've heard over the years. This is particularly about the average Thai man, especially of the maybe the poorer class, but perhaps all of them have a proclivity towards alcoholism. Is that just a gross exaggeration, or is there any truth to that?
Well, there's a lot of alcoholic in this region, I would say. But I don't have any statistics. But yes, there's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And but it's not like, yeah, I guess there's more than, for example, Norway or per capita or America, I would say. But the other thing is, they have a very big methamphetamine problem among the youth.
Really? That's sad to see.
To such a degree that actually the government has they have legalized something that's called kratong now. That's just leaves on a tree that you can just make tea of, and that takes away the craving for even heroin or alcohol or... And they have legalized that, and that's the first time since, well, they made it illegal over 100 years ago. Now they legalize it because they see that they have such problems with the youth.
How is that leaf spelled?
Kratong. It's Kratong, I think, some kratong.
Okay.
Kratong, something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. So they legalized that in a kind of a band-aid effort, you know, to see if they can, you know, turn it around a little bit. But so I would say the methamphetamine use is very, very bad here. But, you know, next door we have Myanmar, and that's where they make it.
Okay.
So I won't say much more, but nothing new under the sun. So I've been so much in Myanmar covering different things in the past, and I talk to... You know, guerrilla intelligence officers, and they have, you know, they heard radio communications about this and that smuggling and large, I mean, conveyor belt things, you know.
Oh.
So that's a problem. And, you know, and Thailand wants to have, like, they have business. They buy oil and gas from Burma or Myanmar. And of course, there's the black market with the methamphetamines that they make inside the jungle there. In Myanmar, and you know, so, and China is up there in the north, and they have their deals, and so nobody wants to rock the boat too much, you know. So the last times I was in Myanmar, I had to be smuggled in, you know. I had to meet some guerrilla soldiers way, way in beyond yonder, and go for 3 hours march to get to the closest guerrilla bases because they didn't want any journalists in there. And that was like 15, 16 years ago, you know, already. So they don't like any publicity around, you know, Myanmar and Thailand and business. And they're fighting like never before in Myanmar. Nobody knows about it because nobody's covering it in the media. But it's the longest war, ongoing war in the world. It's in its 75th year now, I think.
Non-stop. Well, you know, I'll always hear about some kind of unrest in Myanmar, but I have no idea, like, what is at the root of it?
It started in 46, 48, I think, after World War II, after Britain. The Japanese were inside Burma, and then the British Gurkhas, together with the Karen, actually, that's an ethnic group, which I work mostly with, they fought out the British, the Japanese out of Burma, but mostly the Karenis lost thousands of soldiers, and then Britain just left, and then, you know, Aung San Suu Kyi's father was a general, he was assassinated, and after that there was a military dictatorship that hasn't gone away. But, you know, even Aung San Suu Kyi, I have different opinions about her than I had 20 years ago or so, but that's for another day. But they're fighting, like, but the good news in a way is that you could say that the guerrilla groups or the ethnic groups have captured more and more of their country back or their regions back. So that's a good thing because they're fighting for their lives. You know, they're getting exterminated. It's a slow genocide in that country. It's been going on for a long time. But there's so many ethnic groups, but the majority, 65%, are Burmese, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, and the Kareni, the Christian, they are Christian because of the British, you know? And then you have a Buddhist fraction of the Karen, and then you have the Shah and the Chi people, and you have those up north, the Ryonga. It's not the Ryonga people. They're coming in with attack helicopters, firing, you know, into villages, and a lot of people displaced. And yeah, I get emails every week from a certain organization, so I'm up to date on where they're fighting. And but yeah, you know how it is. There's fighting everywhere, but you know, it's mostly those Ukraine and
yeah. Okay, I think you're just cut. Yeah, you just cut out there for a second.
There is something nefarious with American intelligence operations, also with Burma. I don't know what's going on, but I can't prove anything, but I think they're connected in some way. And I've heard, even when I work with Norwegian special forces, that they have people inside the country. And what the hell are you doing in Burma?
Uh-huh.
You know? So I don't know what their plans for that region is. But actually, I thought about going back and just doing a documentary. But then again, nobody want to watch anything. And you have to have, you know, somebody to broadcast this, and you should make it multilingual in different, you know, so people can have subtitles, and I have no budget, and so I don't know, but I have very strong contacts. I'm anytime welcome to come. I've been there so many times, but I don't know. I'm getting old, so I've done it enough.
you're not.
No, but I've been, you know, I'm tired of, I've been shot at several times and arrested, and so it's not that.
In other words, you might be getting too old for that.
Yeah, I think I'm a little bit too old for that, running in the jungle. But it's, they have a strange business relationship, Thailand and Myanmar and Burma, But then again, you know, they're very conform. And like I said, with Norway, I think it was Alan that actually brought up the Ingram study from the 60s that showed that the Norwegians were the most confirmed people in the world. That was in the 1967 or something. And he went to France, Britain, Germany, Switzerland, all over the place. And you thought that the Norwegians were ex-Vikings and they would be anti-authoritarian, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And to the contrary, he was so, found out that the Norwegians were so conformed, they were willing to lie just to go with the flock, you know, at a higher rate than any Frenchman would do or Italian would do, you know. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and then there was another EU, they made a survey of all the countries in Central Europe, including Norway, Sweden, Finland. That was in 2010, and Norway was the most naive people in the whole region. They found out when they were asked, they did this scientific study. So, they're very, whatever the TV says, they do, more or less, 92%, I would say.
That's very sad.
Yeah, it's sad. Yes, it is.
Well, when Alan was a young man, he spent a lot of time in Norway, and he loved the country, but, you know, things change.
Yeah, they do. It's a beautiful place. Mm-hmm. God damn, I miss the nature. It's so beautiful. It's one of the wonders of the world if you go up north. It's so beautiful. It's breathtaking. Mm. But the people, and you know, all the fisheries has been more or less taken, you know, it was like the whole north of Norway just 50 years ago, they were like alive cultures with small fisheries. They're all gone now. You know, it's big trawlers that are out at sea, big companies, and it's just like ghost town after ghost town if you go further north, you know, up in Norway. And the same is in Sweden, too.
Yeah.
It's half of Sweden is unpopulated, you know, the northern parts. There's just like empty farms everywhere, you know.
Oh.
Very sad.
That's so sad.
So, yeah, it's like all desolate, all abandoned. It reminds me of something, somebody calling into Alan Watt once, and there was a caller many years ago, and said, oh, we just went to Scotland, it's so nice, so little people, and horse. And he said, yes, that's because, you know, most of the people have been exterminated. I'm like, yeah. And they were like shocked, you know, they didn't know the story of Scotland, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Now it's sad to see.
Yeah, but one very interesting thing, you know, also with, I'm very glad I discovered Alan when I did, because it was like, it was painful at first, but, you know, to know these things, but it was so, when he had some great sayings, like, be your own champion,
uh-huh.
You know?
Uh-huh.
And I love that. And too slow, I learned this lesson that, well, later he said, just don't overwhelm people with information. Just try just a little bit at a time if they're ready.
Yes.
And don't push anything on people that are not ready. And, you know, I had a lot of good experience with that. And, you know, I took that to heart. And I love his book, the three-part series, and I read that a couple of times, three times, I think, at least.
Well, I find with the books.
He was one of a kind. He was one of a kind. There was nothing like him.
No.
There was no. No way.
No.
So, but how, he was very, was he very comfortable living like that, or what would you say?
Remote and that kind of thing, or?
Yeah, or just like accepting what the world is, you know.
Well,
him, yeah.
That's an interesting question, because he didn't like things the way they were, you know, he didn't like tyranny. He didn't like corruption. That's why he spoke. I think he was compelled in a way to do so because of how abhorrent things were to him.
Mm-hmm.
He was completely committed to doing this in such a way, you know, there was no...
It was
a mission, really. He was completely comfortable with the choices, with everything that he chose to give up, with the privations, et cetera, et cetera. He was completely comfortable with that, and he was dedicated to researching and studying and putting this out in a way that it would just be hard for people to comprehend how dedicated he was to it. And yet... he could laugh, you know, at the end of his so-called day, because he worked like a dog physically, if wood needed to be cut or whatever needed to go on that way, or repairing a car, he could really work at that. And then doing all of the research that he did. But when it was time to settle down and, you know, have a conversation or watch a movie or a documentary, he could make lots and lots of jokes and, be completely relaxed, and he could laugh at the insanity.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
And laugh a lot at the insanity. So, he hated it. And one thing that he told me, and this, he may have said it a time or two, but it always stayed with me, and it does come up in my thinking from time to time. He said, no matter where you are and what you're doing, you could be at a party, you could be having dinner with friends, you could be watching a movie and laughing, you could be out on a hike. This knowledge is always with you. It's really never out of your mind. You can't just go and forget about it. You don't just have a holiday from it.
No, that's true. It changes you forever. Yes.
And it is true. It isn't just a matter of, comparing what you know to what you're seeing. Like you watch something like chemtrails or 9/11 or COVID operation, and you say, okay, I know what's going on here. I know what the agenda is, and I know where they're taking us. It's not just the intellectual curiosity of putting it together. It's this kind of sadness that you learn to live with. It's tragic. It is loss. It's loss of human potential. It's loss, and you learn to live with it. And I remember one time I kind of got teary-eyed. We had to go to the mall for something, and he was with Jason, who was helping with the website. And they went into some store, like getting a computer part or something. I don't know. And I was just sitting out on the bench in the middle of the mall watching people go by, and I kind of got teary-eyed just thinking about that they were just completely clueless of anything having to do with reality. And when they came back out of the store, Alan kind of noticed my mood, and he said, what's up? And I said, well, I was just thinking about people, and, they don't know what's going on. They're not living in reality. They're just kind of wandering about, and it made me sad. And he said, don't cry for the casualties.
Don't cry for the what?
Casualties.
No, okay, I get where he's coming from in a way, but
I think that he obviously recognized that you will feel bad from time to time for the casualties, but at another point in another conversation, he said we're in a war that has been going on for millennia, literally millennia. Yeah. And he said, think that you're going to go out and save this one person, like let's say, for instance, it's a family member or a good friend or a spouse, in the case of you felt so betrayed by you felt betrayed by your ex-girlfriend and the mother of your child. He said, you cannot help them. They are wounded, they are dying on the battlefield, and most often it's because of choices that they have made. and you have to keep going. You got to keep going.
Mm. Yeah. And he also said another very good thing that I took to heart is that if you study this, I think that was regarding him especially because he had so much knowledge, but also I felt that I was compelled, that's why I was motivated to make this documentary and the other one and blogging and trying to inform people and handing out flyers and CDs and before, the internet took really off and he said something about if you had let this information just stay inside you and you do nothing with it, it's going to eat you up.
Yes.
And yeah, so it's I can't let go, so every day I listen to hours and hours of lectures and psychiatrists and this and, fringe things it's become just a new life, and I just want to know. And like he said sometimes, to know about something, even if it's evil and bad, because then you can take better decisions in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And sure, mm-hmm. I would never, if I hadn't stopped on Alan Watt, I probably would be jabbed up now and a normie.
Absolutely. I am always daily, eternally grateful that I heard him. And because the very first thing that I did was start to make changes in my own life. And that is, you almost think, well, that's a contradiction. Alan says, don't cry for the casualties. And yet he just literally gave his life over to do this. I'm sure he would have been much happier playing guitar, whatever, but you can't do that. You're compelled to do something. But it's the, if you indulge, because it is kind of a self-indulgent thing, if you indulge in crying for the victims, or waving your, shaking your fist at who you think the perpetrators are, you've actually neutralized yourself on the battlefield. What you have to have is clear enough vision to know, in your case, you have these skills of photojournalism and years of traveling around the world. And so you can actually use your skills to do something, but you can't do something if you are neutralized because you're just going, oh, I feel really bad, but what can I do? It's just me. It's, I don't have much of a voice. I don't know anything, I mean, trust me, it would be very easy for me to say, well, I really don't know enough to talk. I know something. It's exactly what Alan said. It will eat me up inside if I don't do something with what I know.
Yeah, and that's what I've been trying just to do, And even if I know that I reached out and I helped a few people that became my friends, and they're still my friends through this truth seeking. So it has helped, and one. I still talk to every week in Norway. And, if it was not for your blog, I wouldn't know these things, And he has this enormous library, and we bought we even bought the Club of Rome. But at that time, we had to pay like for $350 for that.
Yeah.
The first revolution. And because I used that in the documentary, I wanted the original, and I made a photograph of the pages and everything, But then the book had become kind of a thing in the truth community, and then the price went up, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Just like, that's how it works, So keep it out of the children's hands, so to say. And, so it was funny, like, even if I showed this to people that were very intelligent, here's the smoking gun, here's the screwed up science, and here's, pictures more snow in the 70s than there is now. Mm-hmm. Or other way around, And then people still wouldn't get it, They're just like, oh, but I think that, you know, the climate thing for very many people, I think very many people see through that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think so. Even though they're not talking loudly about it, and especially now with windmills in Norway when they had hydropower forever, you know?
Mm-hmm. No, it's going to be interesting, Elmer, because
it's all going to the European Union.
Yeah, Alan talked about what kinds of fear would have to be whipped up around this. And I think that we are going to see, now that they've proved to themselves that they can lock us down, we are going to get climate lockdowns.
Yeah, I'm waiting for that one.
Mm-hmm.
Oof.
Yep.
I'm not waiting for it, but I'm not looking forward to it. But I can see they're going to do something like that, you know. And they're going to blame it war, supply chain disruption, this, that. That's why bread is so – and he was talking about food stamps and, you know, rationing, and that's coming. And you know, and I think there's going to be a lot of food, but with low nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
And, mm-hmm. you know, yeah, and just slowly, just people getting sicker. And this is also the thing I have problem with the truth community, is that almost nobody has solutions. And I say, first of all, get to know your neighbor, get out of the cities, mm-hmm. and if you can, and then try to cooperate and learn skills, do things, you know, have some extra water. I have a box here for, you know, 6 months of storable foods. That's, you know, organic, bought from America. And, mm-hmm. you know, just in case,
mm-hmm.
you know, not that I'm hysteric or anything, but I just have it there. And I have been filtrating my water for 20 years.
People would write Alan and they'd say, well, what can we do? What can we do? And that would be one of the first things that he would say. Often enough is if you can get out of the city, try to get out of the city. And then it's just kind of a common sense thing. If you should have a flashlight, and the flashlight should have batteries that are, you know, not expired. Yeah. And you should have plenty of water and some food. And it's really just like you have a first aid kit. You just need to have a little bit of a survival kit without going full bore prepper. Yeah. And do what you can.
Yeah.
And then when you have extra, you know that you can help a neighbor. You can help a friend in need.
Yeah. Yeah. And building communities is very important, I think, for mm-hmm. the future, wherever you are. And I've seen some good examples. There's an American comedian that's called Owen Benjamin that was kicked out of Hollywood when he started in 2016 criticizing the trans, the LBQT movement, mm-hmm. you know. And he was very popular, and now he has like a following of 10,000 of people. And okay, you can say that, well, it's diluted, but they're buying up farms, and they're coming together, and he moved out to LA, and now he has a farm, and he has alpacas and goats and cows and in Idaho, and has four boys, and, you know, just completely left, you know, the limelight, you know, because he was canceled in every direction there was, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's interesting to see that, and he's just trying to, you know, be a good example. And he was like, I didn't know how to use the drill, you know, electric drill. Now I know after a year or two. And he was like, but, you know, it's hard for him, you know, but he can do it, and then others can do it, and I think he was a semi-celebrity, so, but there must be others all over the place doing, you know, that in small pockets, you know, and I think that's the future, and I think that, you know, they don't have the manpower to go after everyone, well, I don't know what the hell on the ground and robots and stuff.
I think what you're talking about, Elmer, is the barbarians of Brave New World, the savages of Brave New World.
Yeah.
Mm. Because there are.
Yeah, I will be.
Yeah. There will be pockets of people everywhere who are going to survive and come through no matter how bad it gets. But we will be the savages because we haven't complied, we haven't gone along, and we don't get all the perks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't get fast Wi-Fi. Yeah. We don't get any Wi-Fi. We don't get, you know, but it's okay. Mm,
fine.
Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah, but I can just do something else. I can get a fishing boat.
Exactly.
You know, I can join just a Thai fisher boat and just ask if I can be along for the ride. You know, there are many possibilities in the future. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and, you know, even though it's depressing things that are happening, I think, you know, it's very easy to fall in the doom and gloom situation all the time.
No.
And even though they have very perfected the system, the powers that be, I think they will be successful to a degree in the short term, but in the long run, they will fail.
Yeah.
Because it's all based on a very complex system that's will be 100% dependent on electricity, but all channels and all cables, everything that's have to be working, mm-hmm. you know, for mm-hmm. the control aspect. And
just
a small glitch, a monkey wrench in something will disrupt it. And then, you know, stop. So the more complex you build a system, the more it falls apart.
Yeah. The easier it is to put a spanner in it. Yeah.
Yeah. So some people say that they overreach with COVID. Maybe, maybe not. I don't know.
I don't think so.
Many people, no, I don't think so either. Because they just, But then again, I hope that this digital money doesn't become a reality just tomorrow, but that they will have some pushback there. I hope, because that is, you know, if that is set in stone and people, the majority accepts that, we're losing more freedoms than ever.
Yes.
And record the image. Yes. We will be shackled on all fronts, you know.
Well, I mean, in the Redux that I put up today, Alan was talking about that. He said slavery, and it is going to be the most intense kind of slavery because you'll be cut off from everything. But again, savages who can barter and know and, you know, have taught themselves a skill or two and, you know, it needn't be doom and gloom, but we are going to have mental resilience.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And this is a spiritual battle also because I become a lot more, I don't follow any religion because I know they're tampered with almost everything, and there's truth to every religion, but I've become a lot more, I'm absolutely a believer in the Creator.
Yes.
And I wasn't that, 20 years ago, I was more like an atheist agnostic, you know, but now I feel that there's so much more.
I think, Elmer, it's really hard to study this agenda going back into antiquity and continue to hold fast to the idea that this is just humans botching things or bad humans getting together and planning things. You know, you just do reach a point where you think there's something else at play.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, I kind of call this human existence on Earth as a kind of a karate dojo place where you are tested.
In a way, I like
you know,
that.
You're, it's the only place you can be three-dimensional with your soul and feel pain, but you learn from pain, you know, or mistakes, you know. And it's kind of, I look at it as a realm of this, and there are many other realms maybe, or, you know, above us. it's meant to be, and it's intelligent design. And when I go into nature, I see everything's perfect. Nothing wrong in nature. It's self-regulating. And it's like, wow, can watch a butterfly or ants or whatever, it's like they all work together like a zipper, And it's like, and then I just sometimes feel sorry for the rulers because, so you're trying to fix something that's not broken.
Yeah.
And it's kind of false. The arrogance, like Alan Watts said, it's like unmeasurable from their part.
Yeah.
That they want to, they must mold, they must do this, must have control. And they can't sleep when they don't have control,
Yeah, I know.
And I feel sorry for them in a way.
Total control freaks.
And I worked so much with celebrities, and I try to tell people, there are 7 deadly sins, but there should be 8 tumors. 1 is covetousness, and 9 is idol worship. That should never happen. And I say I work with big, like AC/DC and big bands and, celebrities, not so many, but a few. And they're miserable, most of them. They're miserable people, more miserable than the poorest guy in the streets,
Well, because so many of them have no
idea.
Yeah, so many of them have no idea who they are.
That's true.
Somebody Actors else is telling them who they are.
And I say, you look up to actors, they don't even know who they are.
Yeah.
Most of them are psychopaths.
Yes.
That's been proven. I got that from Alan.
It's true.
Tests on English acts before the 70s and such. And of course, not all, but a great majority are.
Yeah.
And of course, I experienced this even in the military. And with officers, they were completely sadistic and, And that way, we were just regular army. And, I've seen this in politics. And it's the same pattern, people that tend to go to these. And people that need so much attention. Mm-hmm. I don't understand that, I find that fascinating, pathologically fascinating. That they need to have, oh, look at me, I'm playing the superhero now. No, you're just an actor with stand-in and stuntman, and I work in the media industry, and I'm just laughing at you, So well, the real heroes you never hear about,
That's true. People have said that they, were surprised and saddened that more people didn't know about Alan Watt. But it's like you found for yourself that a lot of people, there's not the entertainment value there, or it's too serious, or it seems like doom and gloom. Mm-hmm. And, in a real world, everybody would know him because he would be talking such amazing information and common sense.
Yes. And unfortunately, the technology part, that the onslaught of the internet and the I call it a dumb phone, not the smartphone, mm-hmm. but whatever. That is okay. TV was the worst things. And then came the cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
And I see, people are not comfortable in their own skin, They put it, we know all too well about people watching too much down in the screen. And, what are you doing? We're sitting here in the jungle. I could sit up in a jungle here, with an old time man, a couple of years older than me, almost 60. And we sit and talk, and he never, his phone is inside another house, mm-hmm. And I have some foreigners around me, and they're just like, oh, with the phone, and oh, there's bad connection up here, and thank God for that, I say. So, why don't we put away the phone so we can speak together,
Yeah.
And there's a beautiful waterfall besides there, and it's all these jungle sounds, and come on, this device is the most dangerous thing that ever pushed on humanity, I would say.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Combined with the social anti-social media and all this narcissism that comes with it, and that is so sad to see how the youth are, you know, completely self-centered and, you know, are getting depressed because they're not pretty enough or whatever. It's like, we never had this problem when I was young.
No, it's just... So sad
to see. But you know, it would be great, you know, if I could take away something, it would be the, you know, the mainstream media, the television, and the cell phone.
Yeah.
So if I had, or I would take that away from all mankind.
Yes, absolutely. Well, they wouldn't, you know, Alan has said repeatedly, they wouldn't be able to achieve anything without the computer and now the cell phone. I mean, you know, it is the tool that is necessary for the total control.
Yeah.
And standardization.
Yeah, it is. The thing is that, you know, I have, you know, I can weld, I can do simple carpentry, I can do a lot of things, you know. Mm-hmm. I can fix technical problems, I can, you know, I'm not an expert in everything, but, you know, I can do a lot of other things than just take pictures. But I see with the young people, they're very skillless.
Yes.
You know?
And not interested.
Not interested at all. And it's like, don't you want to know how to, you know, change batteries in the flashlight?
No.
I heard this story from another podcast that had some grandchildren over, and they were going down into the basement, and they said, hey, here's a flashlight. It's not working. Oh, well, here's new batteries. And they couldn't figure out how to put the batteries inside because they didn't have a charging plug. And then I said, huh. There you have the capsule of the mindset, you know? So if you can't change the batteries in a flashlight, what can you do? Yeah. So, but, you know, but then again, you meet a few young people that are very capable again. So I have hope.
Yes.
We have to.
Or we would just be a couple of old people complaining about the young generation.
Yeah. And no hope, then there's no point in nothing. Yeah. Like I say, they can have controls in the big cities, but I think it's going to pan out very much like Brave New World, mm-hmm. you know, in a way. Mm-hmm. I think so. And you see it also, I talk to so many foreigners coming, but the sad thing is, of course, that they're leaving their own country and their country is like slowly dismantling. But so many want out of the West now, out of the Western mm-hmm. countries. So many people that, well, have the resources, they want to leave. Many, many. So we have Norwegian friends that, you know, want to retire down here in Thailand, for example. You know, so we are retired now, so we are on retirement visa. But you can stay home and fight against the system in Norway, I guess, or any other country. But, you know, I understand people just, they want away from the higher food prices, the electric prices, mm-hmm. and they want the freedom and, you know, the freedom to say what they want,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
and that's, you know, the censorship is like, what? It's like, that's it's off the scale, you know,
mm-hmm.
and how you can't say that, or you can't, you know, even people are offended by a t-shirt. I had a t-shirt with something. But, you know, I'm allergic to stupid people or something like that. Just like it. Mean. And somebody was offended by that.
Oh, you know? No.
They actually said, down here, yeah. And another Norwegian. Oh, I'm sorry. You can only offend yourself. That's not my fault.
Yeah.
You know? You have to, if you have the wrong football t-shirt on, I don't care for sports at all. I never have. So, But you know, people are, they get, you know, they're so fragile, become so fragile. So,
yeah.
Know,
what do they call those nowadays? They call them snowflakes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Right.
They have to get their safe space.
Well, my God. Yes, this and that. And how can you say that? And well, if I go into the woods and yell a forbidden word, what happens, do you think?
Yeah.
Nothing.
Exactly.
No trees will fall down. No global warming will happen. So
no tree was harmed by the wearing of this T-shirt.
No. Or my saying some word or this or that. And, there was, so that's, but that's, the vocabulary going down, people's ability to communicate is shrinking then, and they're getting more antisocial, and I can see how they're nudging people into this virtual reality thing,
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've seen the movie that Ready Player One.
What is it?
Ready Player One.
No.
It's Ready Player One. That's I think it's Steven Spielberg made that a few years back.
Huh.
And it's about the future world where everybody's playing this big game, and in the virtual world, and they're living in squalor, but they're rather they live in the virtual world, And it's kind of, I think that's some kind of predictive programming in that movie, and I think that's maybe how the cities maybe will look like. Well, if you have time, you should just watch it just for fun, for homework.
Oh, I definitely, I will.
And I think you also mentioned a film called Surrogates on another broadcast. Is that right? Yeah, I've seen that. Me and my wife, we saw that recently, and it's like, people, and you see, they rather have a fake image of themselves than be in reality.
Yes.
Yeah, and if I'm getting older, I'm losing my hair, I get wrinkles, I'm getting older, I'm turning into 56 years old, and I'm just going to get older, and I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't care if I'm older, that's just part of life,
Well, you know what I think when I see an actress with the colored hair and the Botox and all of that, I just see a middle-aged actress with colored hair and Botox. I don't see a young woman.
No, I don't.
They're only fooling themselves.
Yeah, it's self-harming and it's just going nowhere fast in a cul-de-sac to nowhere. Mm-hmm. And then at sometime they're going to regret not having babies or something like that. Mm-hmm. And they're going to get more depressed and take more pills. And and that I can say from all my travels that the most happy people I ever met was the poorest people in the world. If that is the slums outside Nairobi or in the slums outside Lima in Peru, they were all in the same boat. And they come running with their last cup of coffee just to give it to us because we come with the camera and everything, And then, that courtesy and being nice, and knowing, so the poor people of the world are really, the salt of the earth in a way and always will be. And they at least they know they're in the same boat,
Yes. Yeah.
But, so we have a lot to learn from that, I think.
Yeah. Something that Alan would comment on is that the people who somehow think, like if you want to call them the middle class or the lower middle class or whatever, they aren't interested in anything except being in that next class up. So they're not really trying to help each other. They're not trying to help people who have less than. They just have the idea that if they work hard enough, they're going to have that too. And it's an illusion. But what you have is people who are chasing, they're chasing the carrot.
Yeah. But unfortunately, the dead end is just like, there's no prize.
No.
At the end, finish line there.
Yeah. No.
That's the thing, but they find out that later in life. So for me now, I'm just very focused on the spiritual things and I'm trying to Yeah, like know thyself, like Alan said, mm-hmm. and that's very important. That's the first rule of engagement. Know thyself as much as you can, and just, you know, be grateful for the small things. And if you can see that, oh, there's another youngster that gets it, that's good, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then just try to focus on that. And like you said, the others are casualties, like Alan said. You just, well, that's, and I think it's been this way for thousands, like you said, thousands of years.
Yes.
And I think, had civilizations in the past, this is just my speculation, that's been very advanced, and they become kind of like spoiled, and they lose their vision, and they go down.
Yes.
And they rise up again. And it goes in cycles like this, you know.
Yep.
But we're still here, so somebody survives every age, I guess. So yeah. So there's always hope. So but it's like I said to some Norwegian friends, they were complaining about the food prices. Well, maybe you shouldn't support the Ukraine war then. Because Ukraine is the biggest wheat supporter grower in Europe. So maybe take that flag over your profile picture, number one. And then what do you mean? Well, the food comes, well, Norway is 95% dependent on imports of food. So come on, don't rah-rah for more war, especially in countries that make food that you're dependent on. So, you know, it's kind of, but you know, people don't know all these things, and it's, that's the way it goes. So, and before, you know, I mean, I said to my friends also that why don't you get a hunt while you can, get a hunting license at least, you know,
mm-hmm.
your rifle and lock it in, and so you can go and get a moose every season when it's allowed in Norway. It's very strict, but anyway, you can do that, you know, and then. You know, and get some other friends to do the same. And, you know, and why not? And they don't do it because they're just like, even though they're truth seekers and they're just, their nose is down in a book or something. Yes, fine. But why not? It's 15 years ago I said to you, learn how to hunt, you know, or whatever, you fish something, you know. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, but. Yeah, but it's very hard to get people to.
I like that, yeah, you know, yeah. Neil Foster that I talk to regularly. He has, I have really watched him in real time learn so many skills, and I'm sure a lot of things that he has done in the past, but I don't think curing bacon is something he's done for years and years. I think he just taught himself that. And he's also gotten into raising his own hens who lay eggs, and he gardens, and he fishes, and there's, you know, so by his example, he is showing himself and his family and his neighbors and the people that he talks to when he talks to me or whenever he's out and about, there is always something that you can do. Always.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that is something
that
you have to.
My wife is very good with. She has very green hands, but we grow our own Italian basil inside, you know, with grow lights, and she makes her own pesto, but it's just small scale, but we make all our food from the bottom up mostly, but we don't grow it so much, but we're in the tropics, so we can get pretty good fresh things, but still in Thailand's a lot of spraying of the agriculture. But we want to have, we have a small garden and we want to make, you know, grow things there, you know, in the very near future. So we'll see how that pans out. And here in Thailand, nobody cares if you build like another story on your house. There's no department coming saying you cannot have that window there.
Yeah.
In Norway, you have to wait for 5 years to get your house, you know, certified for this environmental class A, and it's going to cost you $100,000, and then you have to take a loan. And like, what? No,
that's terrible.
No. So,
I wouldn't mind doing this again with you in a, you know, a couple months or so, because I wouldn't, I think it would be interesting to kind of get into some of your photojournalism stories. I think that would be an interesting topic.
Yeah, I have an Operation Mockingbird story for you.
Oh, good, good. I thank you all for listening. I've really enjoyed this because I had not spoken to Elmer before. He had been communicating with Alan for years, and it was fun to just dive right into a conversation with you. I want to let you know that next week I will be talking with Prince. I have mentioned him before, a long-time listener to Alan's talks, and somebody that I enjoy quite a bit, and I, more importantly, I've gotten a lot from him and learned a lot from him. So I'm looking forward to that conversation. Thank you. Take care. I've got something.